Thank you so much, Graham, and thank you to this beautiful church for hosting us. This really is a gorgeous venue, and it's such a privilege to be here. And it's always a privilege for me to speak to fellow parents, and because this is what I'm completely passionate about. And so if I get a bit excited, it's passion. And so thank you for having me. Thank you for hosting us so beautifully. So just a little bit about me before I start. I have this organization called The Chats, which, yeah, it's, I always think, I'll share that story with you a little bit later, but my daughter was just turned 7 when I started, and she's just about to be 16, so it's been a while now, and it's so amazing how God just, you know, I often think when I was a teenager and people said, well, what do you want to do? Oh, I want to talk to teenagers about sex. It's going to be fun. but God's got a sense of humor, and he's got plans, and he uses our gifts and our talents and our passions and our availability for his kingdom. So it is an absolute delight. And then, yeah, my primary job, is there. These are my people. This is my family. That's my husband, Brad. And my daughter, Emily, is in the middle. She's just about to be 16. She's in grade 10. And Blake and Ryan are twins, if you're wondering why they look the same. They are 13, almost 14. And we live in Amshoti, which is, some of you may know, it's just north of Durban. That photo is literally across the road from our house. The only place I can equate it to in Cape Town is somewhere like Melkbos, because I was there the other day, and I was like, this feels like a little bit of a bigger Amshloti. It's a beautiful, safe community that our children grow up, and in case you're wondering, yes, they're all surfers. I barely, you know, I was like, can you guys put on some nice clothes? We're doing a family photo, and I was like, okay. let me pick my battles. Drew the line at none of us have got shoes on, so that's another story, trying to find someone some shoes to wear. But yeah, so it is a privilege to be a mom, to be a parent, to be a wife, and I am loving being a parent of teenagers. They are complex, they push your boundaries, they push your buttons, they ask the big questions, they make you reconsider the stuff that you've believed for so many years to be true, and yeah, they are an absolute delight. So other than that, I do lead this organization called The Chat, and I divide my time between events like this, speaking in schools, speaking to different communities, speaking to young people, and in case you're an observant person and you did pick it up, I always wear my red shoes when I talk. I have a couple. I should have bought my high tops. I was like, it's cold. It's Cape Town. Why are my ankles sticking out? But that was just bad packing. So I have a couple, and I always wear them, and interestingly, there's a big boys' school that I do some work in Durban called Northwood, and I do an 8-week healthy sexuality program with them, and every single time I do a session with them, I have my tackies on. So it's every day for 8 weeks. It's very hard to, like, create a wardrobe. I just have blue, black, white, blue, black, white, and red. And then the school then asked me to come back the following year to rewrite their grade 9 ALO curriculum. So I'm still doing that 3 days, 3 mornings a week. I rewrite the school's grade 9 ALO curriculum. So I spend 10 hours a week with 300 14 and 15-year-old boys. I don't know who learns more, me or them, but it's fun. And when I don't wear the red shoes, they all get miffed with me. They're like, ma'am, where are your shoes? I was like, can I please wear pink today? Or can I please wear something else? They're like, ma'am, please bring your shoes tomorrow. So I always do wear my shoes. And so the title of this morning is Online Sex and Relationships. Tonight is going to be more general in terms of what our children encounter in the online space, how the online shapes them, educates them, informs them, and all of those things, and how we can be involved in that and parent them through that. And tonight, this morning, we're focusing on one of those challenges, and that is online sex, pornography, and how we can prepare our children for that space. And before we go into that, whenever I talk about sex, I like to start with a reminder for all of us that sex is great. Okay, it's wonderful. It is a gift from a good God to strengthen and deepen the most intimate relationship in our lives. I can speak a long time on this, but just to say that, just a reminder that sex is for three things: procreation, and we see them all in Genesis, so this is nothing new to us. Procreation, enjoyment, go to Song of Songs. You'll see sex is supposed to be a bit, it's just supposed to be fun and enjoyable. And I actually read recently that Hebrew boys were not allowed to read Song of Songs until they were 14 or 15 years old because it's about sex, guys. It is an analogy about Christ in the church, but it's about sex and about how good and how beautiful sex is meant to be. And then the third thing is sex is for deep, intimate connection. Sex connects a man and a woman in the deepest possible way. Physically, I don't have time to go into all the brain science, but human beings are wired as a species to mate for life. It's how we are chemically wired. Our brains release these incredibly strong bonding hormones in sex that are very good in marriages, very helpful when you're 16 and having a one-night stand. Because they bond us in deep and profound and amazing ways. So when we talk about sex, and especially when we talk about this kind of stuff to our children, it is really good to remember that sex is a good thing. It's a wonderful thing. And yes, Hollywood and Netflix might show sex to be something that you do if you even get to know someone. But statistics and research shows us that the people who are having the most satisfying sex are middle-aged, conservative, married people. True story, and I tell the teenagers that all the time, and they go, "Oh, gross, mom, gross, ma'am, that's my mom and my dad." And then this one boy say to me, "Well, then, when do they stop?" And so I said, "I actually don't know. Let me go find out." So I went and did some research on when people generally stop having sex, and apparently, into your 70s is relatively normal. And so I went back and I said to the boys, "Like, your mom and dad might carry on having sex until they're in their 70s." And he goes, "Oh, gross, man, that's my grandparents." So sex is a good gift that we're meant to enjoy for many years within the safe, beautiful relationship of someone who we completely trust and have given our lives to be with. So today is kind of, we're going to talk about somewhere where sex is not meant to be, and that is on a screen. But the reality is this is going to be something all of our children experience at some point. Teenage flirting, dating, sexual curiosity, experimentation, these things are nothing new. They have been happening every generation since the beginning of time. If you think back to your own teen years, I'm sure you remember your first crush, maybe your first kiss, maybe the first time you noticed someone or you realize. And for girls, it's often a lot earlier than boys. You know, girls from about 13, even sometimes 12, they're suddenly aware, "Oh my gosh, he's quite nice." And the boys are not interested. They're still playing Fortnite and cricket. And the girls are like, "What's going on?" And then suddenly at about 14, the boys are like, "Oh, they're quite nice." And the girls are like, "Well, finally." and this kind of this awakening to, sexuality is a normal and a natural part of our growth and of our maturity. And, even within the church context, people have different views on dating, on, when they think it's appropriate to date, what dating looks like for their children, and all those kinds of things. But the reality is, whatever our views are on those things, they're going to come along across online relationships and sex in their journey as they have access to phones. And there has never been, ancient Greek society was pretty sexual, but they live in a highly sexualized society. So this is just a statistic, is the average teenager will see about 15,000 sexual references a year. So that equates to more than 1,000 a month, which equates to however many a day. So these are just sexual references around them. It'll be billboards. It'll be messages they get on their phones. It'll be on TikTok, on Instagram, on Netflix, all around them, advertising. There is a lot of highly sexualized content. And they'll absorb a lot of this content, the influences that they watch on social media, what movies they watch, what songs they listen to. Interestingly, I was listening to a woman who was a victim of sex trafficking a few weeks ago, and this girl, and I'm not one to demonize any kind of music, but she said that her dad wasn't part of her life. He left when she was very young, and her mom was a single mom, worked a lot, so she was very lonely, spent a lot of time on her own, and she discovered rap music. And rap music became her world. And she said, and what she internalized through the music she listened to and the music videos she watched was a very specific narrative about sex. I'm not sure if you listen to rap music, but those who do you know what words they use to describe women? Lots of them. Ho is one of the tamer ones. But basically, the role in most rap, and especially in the videos, a lot of the context of the narrative is a powerful, rich, well-dressed man who has these beautiful girls on his arms. Their job is to make him look good and to satisfy his sexual needs. And so when she got to a space in her life where she had fallen pregnant, she needed to support her child, and she walked into a strip club, she was like, oh, this is what sex is. I've seen this. I've grown up watching and listening to this. I know what to do here. And so what our children are exposed to, even in songs and movies and other things on, especially in media, are going to shape their attitudes around sexuality more than most of the other things in their worlds. And so often, the online space is where they are getting their information from. And sadly, a lot of parents, a lot of families are not talking about sex, maybe because their own families didn't talk about it. They're too afraid. They feel like they don't need to. And so then the online space and media becomes our children's sex education. And TikTok is only too happy to educate your child about sex. So they're going to see it all over the place. They're going to see it in online conversations. We see a lot of, especially a lot of preteen boys throwing sexual lingo around, sending sexual memes, things that they don't even really understand themselves. We see on all of these things, we see them exposed to it by clicking on direct messages that might be sent to them. We see a lot of this in Instagram, very targeted campaigns by porn sites where they actually get people to DM lots and lots of people and say, come and look at my profile, and it's a link to a porn site. Porn site links are embedded into comments on YouTube. They might be sent to them by friends. There's so much searching for stuff. A lot of children, you know, when I was young and I was curious about a word, if I heard a word, and especially if I knew there was something kind of a little bit risque about it and I didn't feel like I could ask my parents, I could go to the dictionary or Encyclopedia Britannica. That was it. Or the library, maybe. But what I would come across would be okay. It would be some kind of information. But now, I mean, I heard a mom the other day who said that she was sitting with her child. Her child was on the iPad. She was working on her laptop. And suddenly her daughter went, and like visibly, you know, shocked. And her mom said, well, what's wrong? And she was like, and eventually pried this iPad out of her daughter's hands. And she said it was the worst pornography she'd ever seen. She said she didn't even know people could do things like that. And all her daughter had done is typed in, what is sex? And had come across this stuff. So often they're searching for stuff. And sometimes you're not even searching for sex. You're searching for something else. I remember when my daughter was little and I was looking for coloring in pages, searching princess and coming up with, like even on Google images, coming up with porn. And so it's everywhere. Pop-up ads, a lot of the teenage boys that I teach say a lot of the games they play have pop-ups, porn pop-ups that come up. And then there's also other people's devices. A lot of communities now live in gated communities, live in complex, and we have this idea that our children are safe in those complexes. So we often, when we live in estates, give our children more freedom than if we were, you know, living in a freestanding home, and they're in and out of each other's homes. And so we might have the best protection on our own devices and in our own homes, but they go into someone else's home and they see something, or they're on a school bus going on a sports tour, or anywhere, you know, they can be exposed to it. And then, of course, there is also the intentional catfishing, and we're going to talk about this, of sexual predators. And then there's unexpected places like Spotify. There is tons of porn on Spotify. And we think, what? It's called audio porn. And so it is literally like, you know, you listen to audio books. You know, my mom used to talk about when they were young and there were no TVs yet and they used to gather around the radio to listen. It's like that, but porn. It's easy for our children to access. There is a specific way to search for it that someone shared with me, and I tested it, and there was tons and tons of porn on Spotify. It's on YouTube. It's on Netflix. Things that one generation ago were porn are now called Game of Thrones or 50 Shades of Grey. There is porn everywhere around us. And so as we just chat through some of the situations and places that we might have to navigate, I'm just going to share also then just some ways that we can help our children to navigate these places. So where are some of the places our children are going to experience this? So the first place that, the first thing I think we need to talk to our children about is online relationships. So this is something I see happening more and more amongst teenagers is the exploration of online relationships often before they're even having physical relationships. Before they're even brave enough to talk to a girl, there are online relationships happening. And you can imagine that the online space has really complicated dating. You know, there's some maybe some positives. You know, the dating pool is now wider. It's not just the people at your school or at your church or whatever. There's a whole bunch of people you can connect with. But there's so much complication around it. You know, there's how to break up and how to ask someone out, you know, all of these different things, how to keep in touch. But the online space is really, it's really changing the way that our young people interact in a, I'd call it romantic or intimate way. So here, okay, let me just give you one other statistic first. It says 23% of teens, 50% of teens say they have let someone know that they're interested online. So before they say to someone, I like you, or make their interest known face-to-face, they do it online. Easier, less potential for rejection, and you don't actually have to be that brave for it. And 65% of teens said they had said that they sent flirtatious messages online. So there's tons of flirting, there's tons of contact that's being made online even before we have it face-to-face. And it's very normal now way of teens getting to know each other is online. So maybe they'll meet and then they'll chat online and get to know each other, but it has made it very, very complicated. You can imagine that it's not as straightforward as meet each other, get to know each other. Okay, you don't like each other anymore, you break up. That was simple. Now we have the online space that complicates things so much. 23% of teens in this Pew Research said that they'd blocked or unfriended someone after the flirty messages they were getting made them feel uncomfortable. So there's a pushing of boundaries that often happens online, where boundaries I hate calling it the real world, but you know what I mean, because the online world is just as real to our teenagers as this. But in the concrete world, boundaries are clearer and harder to push past, but online boundaries are much easier to push past. And then it also brings added pressure. You know, when I was dating in high school, I would maybe see the boy that I liked or whatever on a Friday. We'd have our lives. I might see him at the beach at the weekend and then see him on Mondays at school again and be like, oh, what did you do at the weekend? It's not like that anymore because of the phones. So here's some of the constant contact pressure that our children are feeling. 85% say they expect to hear from their loved one at least once a day. 11% said hourly. So every hour they are in contact with this person that they either like or have a relationship with. 35% said every few hours, and then 38% said once a day. But this constant contact can be exhausting and put pressure and also move the relationship along way too quickly. These are teenagers. Sorry, I should have clarified. Thank you for asking. So you can imagine that the relationships move at a certain pace when you're only seeing each other face-to-face, but now you have all of this contact and often saying and doing things that are much more intimate that you would do face-to-face, and so it moves the relationship along. It also brings a lot of insecurity and jealousy into a relationship. I see this with teenagers all the time when I have conversations with them about, okay, so you've got a girlfriend, you've got a boyfriend, what is your expectation about their social media? Are they allowed to, I'm talking to a teenage boy, I say, is she allowed to like other people's posts, other guys' posts? Some of them are like, yeah, maybe. Some of them are, yeah, it's okay, depending on what she says. You know, you can't say you look hot, or you can maybe say, well done. So there's all this complexity, and then I say, well, is it okay for them to snap other people? Is it okay for your girlfriend to
talk to other people on Snapchat or on WhatsApp, some of them say yes, some of them say no. Most of them feel this insecurity around it. And I spoke to one teenage boy who said that his girlfriend made him delete every single girl off his social media because she was so insecure about it. But also then there's this thing of what does cheating look like? So where's the cheating line when it's online? So, okay, so I'm allowed to snap other guys if I'm dating this guy, but what am I allowed to send him? What am I allowed to say to him? And where is the line? And we're seeing so much insecurity because there's online cheating. So you haven't actually done anything physically, but you are being emotionally intimate on your phone with someone else. And so it is incredibly complicated for our young people. And 22%, this is all one bit of research that I saw, said that an ex-partner had put them down, called them names, or said mean things about them online after they'd broken up. So the complexity doesn't stop when you've broken up. It's now carrying on after the relationship has ended. And that looks like all sorts of different things. We see what we call revenge porn, which is when a couple break up and then the one person then has intimate, maybe naked images of this person and then shares them with other people to get back at the person that they're angry with. Because most teenage relationships don't end amicably. There's usually a lot of emotion involved. There's a lot of hurt, a lot of pain. Often there's someone has done something wrong, and so now someone has this content that belongs to you. And so teens who are connected with people sexually or romantically interested can really, the online space can pose some very challenging situations for them. The first one, and I've already just alluded to it, is the sharing of nudes. People are doing this more and more, especially teenagers. I hear cases of as young as grade 6 and grade 7. Last term, there was a family that I was helping, and their grade 7 boy had a nude of a girl on his iPad, and the school actually found it and told the mom about it. And you know, moms who are wounded and in pain often try to blame other people, which is what she did, and she blamed the school. She pulled this boy out of the school. She tried to put him in another school in the community who had heard about this, who said, no, thank you. We don't really want your son to come to our school. And so he didn't have a school to go to for a while until she went back to the original school and said, can we come back? So he is back at his original school. But he was a 12-year-old boy, and this is happening more and more. There was a situation even at the school where my boys go. They were at hockey practice a couple weeks ago, and there were a bunch of the boys sitting around. Fortunately, my boys' high school is a phone-free school, so from the beginning of the school day to the end of the school day, there are no phones. The boys hand them in at the beginning of the day. They get them back at the end of the day, but then they do have them during sports practice. And so this boy had his phone, and there were a bunch of boys sitting there, and he took out his phone, and he's 13, just started grade 8, and he said to the boys, look at my cat, look at my dog, look at my girlfriend. And it was a full frontal of a 13-year-old girl that he showed all of the boys, including my son. So like I say, sometimes you can do all you want on your own devices, in your own home. They're sitting at hockey practice, and they're exposed to child porn. And so that's, you know, I often, as I processed it and it was a journey, I often thought about this little girl who I don't know her story, I don't know who she is, but there must have been a lead up to her sending that picture to this boy, and I'm sure it looked a little bit like this. Oh, I love you, I just want to feel close to you, you're so beautiful, I will never share it, you can trust me, I would never do that to you, blah, 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 blah. This girl sends a nude, ends up next to the hockey field with a bunch of boys. And so when our children give into this pressure that they're finding to send nudes, and it is not uncommon. My daughter is 16, and she gets asked regularly by random guys for nudes. It's just a common thing. And I even speak to girls, and they say one of two things. Well, the girls who are okay with nudes, they give me one of two reasons. They say, well, as long as it's a good one, I don't mind it being out there, as long as I look good. Or I just won't have my face in it, then no one knows it's me. Then they're okay to send these images out into the world. And a lot of them don't seem to care. And it's I'm not sure why, but it's almost like the objectifying of humans on the internet has made us numb to the preciousness and the beauty and how we should protect and love our bodies. But there is so much pressure, specifically on girls, to send nudes. And so we really, this is something that they need to be aware of. I spoke to a girl, I did a talk at a big girls' high school last term, and this girl came up to me afterwards, and she said she has sent nudes before, and so I'm not sure if you have teenagers, you'll know there is vibing, chatting, dating, and there's all of these kind of phases that kind of overlap and intersect. And she said, I was chatting to this boy, and he asked me to send a nude, and I did. And she said, and then we ended it, and we stopped chatting, and I saw him a few weeks ago, and he came up, and he said, oh, I've still got that pic. And she said, and I feel so uncomfortable now. She says, I have no relationship with him, and he has this picture of me on his phone, not sure what his purposes are. I'm sure they're not pure when he looks at it. And she said to me, what can I do? And I said, well, there's not much you can do other than asking him to delete it, but what are the guarantees around that? But when our children do that, often those pictures stay in circulation, get shown to other people, and worst case scenarios, and I've seen this in multiple cases, they get sold and uploaded to porn sites. And I've seen it with young people where the person is so angry about the breakup, about what's happened, that they actually tag the girl's full name and where she lives. And forever, that is on Pornhub or wherever. And I was listening to this one girl who said she had sent thousands of emails to Pornhub begging them to take these images off their site, and they were just ignored. Pornhub doesn't care about people. They care about profits. And Pornhub has something like 30 content moderators. So those are the people who make sure, can you think of a worse job? Being a porn site content moderator. It's like literally you have to just watch porn to make sure that there's no children, the people are not being raped, it's consensual, all of those things. But Pornhub has about 145 million views a day. That's how much content is on there. They have, this talk is not specifically about that. They have 30 content moderators. Facebook has 6,000 content moderators. So Pornhub in this world of online sex, if someone's content does end up on a porn site, the only way you ever really get it down is taking legal action. They don't care. They're not going to respond and go, oh, I'm so sorry. We didn't mean to violate your privacy, you know, here. Because as soon as the video or the picture gets taken down, it's now no longer under Pornhub copyright. So it just appears on a different device. Someone has downloaded it and has it on their device. So nudes are something that we really, really need to deal with. And often young people don't realize, because they're young people and they're prone to risk-taking, it's what teenagers are about, their prefrontal cortexes are not fully developed. I heard it said once, teenagers and children can't see round corners. Adults are there to see round corners for them. And this one teenage girl, she was actually in grade 7, she was 13, and I was doing a talk like this. She said to me, my mother does not have the right to tell me not to send nudes to my boyfriend. It is my body, it is my life, and it is my device, and I will decide what to do on it. And I just, in my heart, this is like, my darling, this is why you need a mommy. Because you think like this. Because you might not care now, but there's going to come a time that you do care that content is out there. Some of you may remember last year when Bianca Squimby, I think it was last year, Miss South Africa, she was pulled out of the Miss Universe pageant because of something she put on her social media when she was 12. Ollie Robinson, a cricketer, he also lost, I think he had a 3-year ban, I think it might have just ended, because of something he put on social media 10 years before when he was a teenager or he was in his early 20s. So the reality is, a lot of the time our children won't care now because they're prone to risky behavior, but it's not like just doing something silly, you know, as a teenager. It's forever immortalized in the online context. And also, we've got to remember that there are laws around this. There are laws around naked images of children. So a naked picture of a child under the age of 18 is child pornography. And even if it's even if it's a girl who's taken a selfie of herself naked, she has created child pornography. And then when you send an image, even just to one person, it's called publication. You've then published and distributed child pornography. And then when you have it on your device, you're then possessing child pornography. And so even though sometimes our teenagers can, and our culture can be quite blasé about this and feel like it's liberated and woke and evolved to do these kinds of things, there are very, very important legal implications online. And then the other thing about these online relationships is often people act very differently online and offline, especially teenagers. I mean, no, I know adults as well. I had a friend who was on Tinder for a bit, and she was a work colleague, and I remember she's like, okay, I'm just going to try this. I don't know where you meet good guys. I'm just going to give online dating a go. And I know people who have met amazing people in online dating. I know that it can work. But for her, she met this guy on Tinder, and they started chatting, and they kind of got a relationship, and she was so excited. She was like, he's the one, he's so lovely, he's this, he's that. And it went on for 2 weeks, and last thing at night, she was talking to him when she was in bed. First thing in the morning, they were having their coffee and they were chatting. And then she had a date with him and she came back. She was, oh my word, that is not who I thought I was dating. That is a completely different human. So like I love to say to teenagers, unless you know what someone smells like, you're not dating them. If you're dating someone that you've met online, you are dating a made-up person. They don't exist, because it's like taking all the good parts of me, the nice selfies when I've got good makeup and good lighting, when I'm really kind and I'm interested in you, and you're dating that version without the snappy, like, hair, whatever version of me, because we just leave that part aside. I'm not going to put that out there onto the internet. You're just dating the person that you're making up literally in your own head about me. And so we see this a lot with young people, is they swapping out these real, messy, complicated, awkward, real-life relationships for easy online ones. And the implications are very far-reaching, actually. We don't realize it. It's not just that our young people are dating fake people. It's that when they're not dating real people, they're not developing the skills they need for adult relationships. So you need to, maybe it's more the guys than us, is that feeling of like going up to a girl and going, do you want to go for, I don't know what you did, do you want to go to the matric dance with me? Or do you want to do this with me? And your heart is racing and you're like sweating. And then she goes, no thanks. And you're bummed, you know? Or, you know, someone... You start a conversation with someone and you think like you're doing quite well and you're quite cool and she goes, okay, cheers, and she walks away. Because you've been talking about rugby and she's not interested in rugby, and then you go, okay, well, I've got to think of some new skills, yeah? But all of those things they need for adulthood. You know, those relationships of interacting, and I know I'm talking a little bit about boys, but this is important to note, it's for girls and for boys. I read an interesting article the other day on Psychology Today that said, why are so many young men single and sexless? So activity amongst 20-something-year-old men is at an all-time low, and something like 60% of millennials have given up finding a partner. And a lot of that, according to this article, goes back to our devices, because they've grown up in a digital generation where their relationships have been primarily digital, and so they don't develop the skills that you need for an actual relationship. Because actual relationships are hard. Like, they're hard. Like, other people can be so unreasonable, and they want to do what you don't want to do. And then you have to go, okay, let's do that. Whereas actually, if you're online, you just leave them on read and come back later when you feel like talking to them, you know? It's so much easier. And so we're seeing, and it is extreme. Some of you may have heard of OnlyFans. which started out as a page where people could access exclusive content of celebrities that they wanted to follow, and it's quickly become a porn site. And so we have men, rather than dating real women, going onto pages like OnlyFans, where they can pay a subscription for a woman to them and do sexual things and satisfy them. And you know what? They don't even need to have a job. They don't even need to compliment her. They don't even need to ask her what she wants, how she feels. And it's so much easier than actually having a normal relationship, a face-to-face relationship. And in Japan, actually, the birth rate is falling because so many men are doing that instead of having real relationships. The online porn industry in Japan is one of the biggest and is having the most devastating effects on society. And so when we say, okay, it's cool to have an online girlfriend instead of a real one when you're 15, we've got to think that our children are going somewhere. And what are they needing? And if we just let them have online relationships as opposed to real ones, that is pretty dangerous for their futures. And then the second thing, which is a little more sinister, is what we call catfishing, sextortion, and grooming. So this is the intentional targeting of children with sexual content. So I'll just quickly unpack those three words and then just talk a little bit about it. So catfishing is when someone pretends to be someone else online. It's not always sexual, but it is pretending you are someone else to develop a relationship for a purpose, because there's something that you want to get out of it. You want to trick or manipulate the person into something. And we see a lot of this in the online space, people pretending that they are a child. So a little while ago, during COVID, actually, these two little girls were playing on Minecraft, and another person joined and started chatting to them on the chat of Minecraft. This person said, oh, I'm also 9, love Minecraft, love what you're building. They started to chat and said, well, where do you guys live? And the girls said, well, we live in Durban North. And they're like, oh my gosh, I also live in Durban North. I've just moved here. I'm only starting school. You know, because of COVID, I'm doing online school. And they started to chat. And then these two little girls said to this person that they were chatting to, we've got to go, we've got ballet now, and we're doing our ballet online because of COVID. And the little girl online said, oh, I also do ballet. Do you think your ballet teacher would mind if I joined the class just so that I can see what it's like? And, you know, maybe I can join your studio. And the little girls were like, cool, send the Zoom link. And the ballet teacher's doing the class and seeing this random person coming on, coming off, coming on, coming off. And the ballet teacher's husband was into IT. And so she just said to him, just check what this is. And it was a man. It was a person from another country, and a man had been talking to these girls and now was watching them do ballet. But so that's what we call catfishing, is when someone pretends to be someone else. And I could bore you all day with stories. And then grooming is when children also are specifically targeted, and sexual grooming is a systematic process of befriending a child with the goal of sexual content, what we call image-based abuse, so the getting of sexual images. Obviously, grooming happens offline and online, but I'm specifically talking about online. And this is a very sinister and very dark space of the internet. And where do sexual predators go? They go where children are. A friend of mine, she gave her child an app similar to TikTok, and she thought she had shut this thing down completely and had all the restrictions, but she didn't realize that the app had a chat portion to it. And the teacher called her in one day and said, I just need to share something very disturbing that your daughter has just told girls in the class. And she was 6 at the time. And she said she was on this app and she realized there was a chat area to the app. So she's a cute little blonde thing. She had taken a photo of herself, put it on her profile pic. And within a couple of hours, actually, this man into a message that said, you're so beautiful, love your hair, you make me feel like this. And it was a picture of an erect penis. Yeah, on a little kid's dance app. So this happens, and that's sexual grooming. Often it is a lot more subtle than that. I helped a family a little while ago whose son was in grade 8 and he was on the autism spectrum but in mainstream schools. So he battled with friendships. He battled to express himself. And then he discovered Discord and his mom said his life changed. Discord is an app. They have servers which are kind of groups where you can find people of similar interests and connect with them. And this boy was interested in something called furries. Not sure if anyone's heard of furries. Has anyone heard of furries? Okay, a few people. So furries are, I forget the proper name, but it's kind of where people are into animals with human characteristics. So think Bugs Bunny, Donald Duck, like human-like animals. But there's a whole fandom, there's a whole thing around this. They have conventions in America. People have different names. They have different avatars online. It's a, on the surface, can seem like a harmless, thank you, harmless. But it has a very sinister, very sexual side to it. So this boy joined a server for a furry server and was befriended by another boy. And this boy developed a friendship with him. And the mom kind of started to see this boy disappearing more and more into his bedroom, guarding his phone more and more, not wanting to be with the family and just wanting to be in the room. She just happened to walk past his phone when it was charging, and there was gay porn on his phone. And what had happened is that this man had groomed him over a period of months, starting out saying he was a young boy and then kind of going, well, I'm a little bit older than I said I am, but I love you, and we've got this connection. And he had groomed him for very sinister purposes. So there's a lot of this kind of thing on the internet. Sometimes it happens also, I think something we need to remember is that grooming can sometimes happen with people that we know. And when adults have access to our children via their phones, a lot of that grooming can happen on that phone. I know in Cape Town you had that incident of the youth pastor who's now serving time because of sexual grooming that happened via Instagram. And at St. Andrew's School in Grahamstown, you may have heard the story of the water polo coach who sexually groomed many of the water polo players, and one of the boys ended up taking his own life. The majority of that sexual grooming happened via WhatsApp. So we often think, oh, my child doesn't have social media, they've just got WhatsApp. Well, the thing with WhatsApp is anyone can message your child. There's no, like, send a friend request or anything, or like, let's make it private. It doesn't exist. And what worries me a lot about, and I say this at every single, I speak at a lot of schools conferences, and I say this every time, is I have an issue with adult men having access to my child. I have an access with adult women too, but it's a problem for me that adults who are, so the basketball season will start. I haven't even met the coach because in high school you don't go to sports practices, and suddenly this adult man has my child's number and is adding him to groups. And I know this is the way that schools are going, and I'm to be honest, fighting against it. I think we need to have, for the sake of the coaches and the sake of the children, we need to be careful. This is murky water. The fact that if my son had fall on the basketball court, that his coach can directly message him and ask him how he is. No. I don't want you messaging my son. You can message me, and I will tell you if my son's okay. And I'm not trying to micromanage my children. I try and give them a lot of freedom to, and that is why the sports coaches say they want the groups with the boys, because they want them to be independent and responsible. And I get all of that, but I just feel with a device, it can go a little bit sideways, and we need to just be careful of that. And then sextortion is something we see lots of. Emma Stadler, who's our top social media lawyer in South Africa, she says she gets about 5 calls a day about this, and with very young children as well, as young as 11 or 12 years old. And I get probably about 1 a month, where a parent will phone me or message me in a panic and say to me, sorry, and again, I'm talking about the boys, but it happens to girls and boys. But I'll just give you the most recent one. Is this mom messaged me and said, my son's done something really stupid. And what had happened to him is someone had messaged him on Instagram. He didn't know the person, but she had a very pretty profile picture, was the same age as him, and said, I'm a friend of so-and-so's, love your profile. And they just start to chat. And very casually, very harmlessly, chatting, and then it just becomes a little bit more intimate, and a little bit more intimate, and then they're sharing pictures, just normal pictures. Oh, I'm here, I'm doing this. life. And then very intentionally and systematically, the person who is doing the grooming takes the relationship to more and more intimate levels until that this boy, he got sent a nude. And interestingly, this child was from a Christian family, and he got this nude, and because he's a teenage boy, some part of his brain and body actually really liked it, even though in his head and in his upbringing, he knew that looking at a naked girl is not right and not good for him. His prefrontal cortex was not talking very loudly to him in that moment. It was going, don't do that. And his amygdala was like, whoa! And so he sent a nude back because she said, oh, I've sent you one, now you need to send one. And so he sent it back, and then she ghosted him. Gone off social media, can't find her anywhere. Until the next day, he got a WhatsApp from, I have your pictures, I have your contact list, you need to give me this amount of money or I'm going to start sharing these pictures. The little guy didn't go to his mom straight away. He emptied his bank account, paying off this person. But then the person, obviously, never going to be satisfied with that amount of money. And then they said, well, if you don't have any more money, you need to give me your Instagram login details, which he did. So now, I mean, I don't know what he was thinking. He was just desperate, I guess. And so now he's locked out of his, and then they changed all his passwords. So now he's locked out of his Instagram. They've got all these phones, and then he's finally like, maybe I should tell my mom, which he did, which is when they phoned me. But this kind of thing happens all the time. And with boys, generally people demand money. With girls, they generally demand more pictures. That's the pattern I've seen. But it happens all the time. So there is a lot of this kind of thing that our children have to deal with. And then the third thing is just social media and other media. You know, the average teenager spends between 6 and 9 hours a day online and about 45 minutes a day with their family. And most families are unwilling to have conversations with them. You know, I say to people who have very little kids who are scared to have the birds and the bees talk, I say to them, that talk is a walk in the park. Wait until they're teenagers. Wait until, yeah, I'm not going to actually say some of the things I was going to say because I know there's some young people here, but some of the questions that you're going to get and some of the things you need to talk about are really, really scary. And so a lot of parents are just not doing it. And so our children are getting the idea about what is good, right, and ethical about sex from social media and from the internet. And social media is shaped by porn. The social media space is shaped by porn in terms of sexuality. So not so long ago, TikTok, there was a trend of hold your girlfriend by her throat while you kiss her. I went and I always go and look for these things to make sure that people are just not making stuff up and coming to me with stories. And I went and searched the hashtag, and sure enough, 12-year-old girls held by the throat while their boys kiss them. That's coming from porn because 90% of porn is violence in nature and shows that girls like violence. And so the TikTok trends are being shaped by that. And you see, and I always take, when I every now and again I download TikTok to remind myself why I hate it. And I go and I take deep dives. I go and I just look for the worst stuff. And I always find it. I always find hashtags around anorexia and self-harm and then the ones around domination and sexual violence and all of these things. It is all there. Then I also find all the interviews with the porn stars and how they explain their experiences about making porn and how cool it is and you know, how it's just such a good thing for your relationships and how they want to be there making porn because they're living their best life and making so much money and supporting their families. And so this is the kind of narrative that our children are taking in from social media. They're seeing all of these sexualized images. And one of the boys said to me the other day, he said, you know, for me, one of the things that is on TikTok that sometimes people don't see as porn, but for me it is porn, is there's so many breastfeeding videos. And we think about it, and we're like, oh, these moms are trying to empower each other about how to breastfeed, but naked boobs are naked boobs to a teenage boy. Whether you have a baby in the picture or not, it's still porn to them. It's still sexualizing them. And so naked, there's just tons of naked people. So you're like, oh, no, there's no porn on TikTok. Well, there's lots of different, there is lots of that kind of thing. And then also the worldviews and the values that are being perpetuated. They're not saying sex is precious. They're not saying sex is important. They're not even saying sex needs to be consensual. They are selling our children a very disturbed, distorted view of sex. One of the people that I do follow, just to keep a little eye on, is Andrew Tate. And he's a very big voice into our children's lives, especially our teenage boys' lives at the moment, and his views on women and on when women don't do what they're supposed to do and those kinds of things are very disturbing. And then also normalization of what is illegal and immoral is also on there. So pornography is, I've already spoken a little bit about it. There's a lot of porn on social media, but there's tons of porn on the internet that our children will be exposed to. The other day, I was with a couple, and they were just sharing their story with me, and they got married when they were in the early 20s. They were a Christian couple. They decided to wait for marriage to have sex, and they had sex on their honeymoon. And then, as this woman explained to me, her husband had lost interest in her completely. He never wanted to touch her. And 6 months later, he confessed his porn addiction. And he'd been watching porn since he was 14. And it had, I don't have a lot of time to go into this. I've got a whole thing on porn on my website if you want to have a look at it. But the porn had so damaged his body and his brain and his views on what sex was that when he had sex with an actual woman on his wedding night, it was boring. She didn't know what she was doing. She was not looking anything like a porn star. She was not behaving like a porn star. She had her own needs. She was awkward, and it was so he just went back to porn. And it's actually now when I met them, they were 2 years into their marriage, and he was a year into his porn rehab, and they had sex just 6 months ago. Their sexual relationship had started again. And so porn is having a devastating effect on our teenagers and on their relationships. And it is so normalized that this is, it's like a Trojan horse. It looks like something that's pleasurable, that's fine, that's just, you know, live and let live. It is devastating for our culture. Here's just some stats. 73% of teens say, and this is in America, but I actually, let me just share with you, I did my own little survey last week at the school where I work. And mine's kind of it's got a very big mix because it's in quite a wealthy area, the school where I work, but it's a very mix of demographics and races, and it's boys. So only 15% of these 14-year-old boys said they haven't seen porn. So 85% of 14-year-olds, yeah, I've seen it. 15% I've seen it. 49% said I've come across it at some point, but that was it. 22% of the boys say, yes, I watch porn. I watch porn sometimes. It's something I do. 5% said they watched it regularly, and 4% said they were addicted. And then 7% said that they had used to watch it but realized it was wrong and they stopped. And so porn is having a devastating effect on our boys. And what our children are being exposed to through porn, it's nothing like when we were young. It's not a group of boys huddled around a Scope magazine. It's nothing like that. It is violent, it's degrading, it's criminal, it's immoral. The three most searched genres of porn are sexual violence, child porn, the genre is actually called teen ghost, and incest. That is what is being consumed when our children watch porn. And this is what's being normalized in our culture when we watch porn. It is having a huge impact. The average age a South African child sees porn for the first time is 10 or 11 years old. It is a huge industry. It is targeting our children. Erectile dysfunction, broken marriages, addictions, sexual violence is increasing amongst children and amongst teenagers. And domestic violence is increasing, all fueled by pornography. So what can we do about it? There are some amazing things we can do. The first thing we can do is be involved, be present, be aware, be involved in your children's online lives. Do not think that your child can just do this alone. Have the right software on every single device that your child uses that at least will provide some barrier of protection against it. It will keep everything out, but it will keep some of the things out. It's almost, I like to equate it with wearing a seatbelt when you put your child in a car. It's not gonna protect them from everything, but it's a very, very good first step in protecting your child. And then talk about boundaries and behaviors. Talk about values. Talk about the spaces that they should and shouldn't go in the online space. Talk about what apps they're allowed. Have control over apps. What are they downloading? Is there a permission that's coming to you when they go onto the app store so that you can see if it's an appropriate app? Or are they downloading stuff like Omegle and on OnlyFans pages and things like that? Have an open phone policy in your home. For me, this is fundamentally important, that everyone has one person who can pick up their phone at any time and look at it. When anyone has a secret, you know, I always think of Lord of the Rings, my precious. That's how we feel about our phones. It's my precious, don't touch my phone. And people touch it and you're like, you know there's nothing on it, but you're like, why are you touching my phone? Parents, you need access to your children's phone. Until they're 18, that phone belongs to you anyway. They can't legally own a phone until they're 18. It is your phone. You're 100% responsible for what is on that device. Spouses, it's each other. We need to be able to have access to each other's phones. Single people, you need that good moral friend who will kick your butt if you do dumb stuff to have access to your phone. Have that person who you know won't post dodgy stuff about you. Have all the passwords to all of the spaces. Don't give phones too early. Never have phones charging in bedrooms overnight. Most people won't look up porn when they're in the kitchen with their granny. Okay, they're going to do it at night when their thinking is compromised and they're tired and the house is dark and parents are asleep. And that is when a lot of dumb stuff happens on phones. Limit apps, limit time. The more time we're online, the more dumb stuff we're prone to do. And have ongoing conversations about digital well-being. We're going to talk all about that stuff tonight. And then the next thing is talk about values and identity. For me, this is the main one. Because, like I said, we can do whatever we want in our own homes, on our own devices. But they go next door, they go on the school bus. So talk about the why. Talk about why porn will ruin your life. Talk about why we don't identify people on screens. Talk about why sex is good and something for your future. Talk about why we respect one another. Talk about integrity. If you've got this deep, intimate relationship with a girl online and you can't even look her in the face and talk to her when you see her at the beach, problem. Talk about it. That's called integrity. Talk about accountability, boundaries, respect. Please talk about sex. There's a book of mine there. If you haven't spoken to your children about sex and they have online access, please do it. 8 is too late. 7 and 9 is the right window to talk to your child about what sex is. And it is one of the greatest protections you can give them. It becomes a grid for sex. Okay, sex is something good, part of the human experience, part of marriage. And then they come across the dodgy stuff online and they're like, I know what sex is. When my son was exposed to that porn next to the hockey field, you know what he said to me? He said, Mom, I was shocked, but I was not surprised. I told him, this is what sex is, but there's these dodgy versions of sex. There's people who put sex on screens. It's going to happen to you, my boy. And so when it happened, he wasn't a deer in the headlights because I had spoken to him about it. Have deep, important conversations. As they get older, talk about the big things they're going to see and hear about online. Masturbation, porn, types of sex, same-sex relationships, sexting, nudes, catfish. Told you that the birds and the bees was an easy one. These are the ones that start to get really complicated. But talk to your teenagers about this because they're going to be curious and we don't want them going to Google it. We want them coming and talk to us. Talk to them about integrity. Talk to them also. Sometimes teenagers are not that driven by what's right and wrong. They're quite good at pushing boundaries. Talk to them about, is this useful? Is this helpful to the person that I am and the person I want to be? Look at this image. Where is it taking me? Because everything you do, you're becoming someone. Who are you becoming by what you are doing? When you're on that device and someone sends you that link, is it something that's going to take you into the future that God has for you, make you into the husband, the businessman, the friend, the man that you want to be, or is it taking you away from that? And then the next thing is prepare them. I've already spoken briefly about this. I spoke to you, like I said, with Blake. I prepared my boys for some of the stuff that they're going to encounter online. And I also prepared them for what their bodies would do in that moment. Because I need them to know that that's not shameful. That's normal. You're a sexual being. What you do after that's what's important. So you feel the feels. You have the experience. Okay, but I'm prepared for this. I knew I would feel like this, but I remember my parents saying, that feeling, that's for your wife one day. You want to bond to her. You want to save that attraction, that desire to strengthen your marriage one day. So prepare them. Talk to them about the law. Talk to them about what I like to call the billboard test. If you don't mind it being on a billboard, then it's okay for it to be on a phone. unless you don't mind your nude on a billboard, then there's a bit of a problem. But talk to them about the future. Talk to them about the fact that they, before someone brings them in for a job interview, they're going to Google you. And what are they going to find? If it's a nude, you're not going to get a job. Doesn't matter if you're top of your class. And then talk to them about leading. Talk to them about leading themselves and leading other people. You know, I always say to my boys, surround yourself with boys who are like-minded, but also you need to be okay to be the only one who gets up and walks away. Because you know what's going to happen then is you're going to give courage for a whole bunch of other boys to get up who didn't have the courage to walk away. And so that's what we want to do, is just encourage our boys to lead themselves and to lead other people. And then be a safe place. Our kids are going to do stupid stuff. They're teenagers. We did stupid stuff. We just did it before the internet. You know? And so that's all. They have the internet, which makes their stupid stuff sometimes immortalized. And so when they do, be a safe place for them to come and have the support that they need to fix their mess or clean up their mess. Make sure that they can talk to you about anything. That they know they're deeply loved and nothing ever changes that. That you're not going to kill them, throw their device in the sea and lock them in a bedroom because they've done something dumb. But you are going to journey with them and help them to get through that. Envision them and protect them with good information. Build connection, 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 connection. I can't even say that word enough. Is that that's what's getting me through these teenage years? My kids do something wrong or we disagree on something, I always fight for connection above all things. And when I have to discipline, when I have to talk about stuff, I always make sure that at the end of that we are connected. They feel connected to us. So just in conclusion, a couple of just last recommendations that we tell our teenagers to steer clear of any sexual content online. If it's vaguely sexual, if it's a girl in a tiny bikini under a shower on your Instagram page, unfollow. You know, if it's a boy sweaty, you know, the boys love it in the gym. Pants like this, six-pack like that. Maybe you need to unfollow him. I mean, if it's about health and wellness, that's something. But if it's dangerous for you, unfollow it. The risks and the dangers are so high. Porn should be avoided at all costs. Talk about this because our culture is talking to them about this. We need to remind them of the danger of digital content. Remind them that intimate conversations, intimate relationships need to be had face-to-face. Online is for superficial conversations. And it's fine. You can have superficial conversations, but when we go deep, when we go intimate, when we go personal, that needs to be face-to-face. Not only because it's dangerous to do it online, but because you are growing and developing into the man or the woman that you want to be, who can be a great date, who can be a great boyfriend, who can be a wonderful wife, who can have a great relationship. And when things go rocky in your relationship, you have the skills to have the hard conversations. You're not going to WhatsApp them and go, "You're such a dork." You know, you're going to have conversations. And then second to last, remind them that what they watch and listen to will shape them. And who do they want to be shaped into? That they should choose wisely for themselves what they allow into their hearts and minds and intentionally make choices that set them up for good, healthy relationships. I tell all the teenagers that I work with, including my own, that my goal for them is great sex. Wonderful sex lives when they are married and when they are mature. And there's no magic wand. It's what you do now. And for our children, it's going to be a lot of what do you do online now? What are you seeing and what are you doing online? What you consume, you will become. And then envision them about the purpose of sex and how wonderful it is. And for me, that is also one of the, and I had this conversation with my daughter the other day, and she's not even 16 yet, and she can't wait to be married. She just wants to be married and have children. That's like, and I'm like, okay, you're going to have to wait probably at least 10 years. And she goes, "I just want to be married. I can't wait to be married." And then we kind of talk about sexual relationships and stuff like that. And she goes, "What if I don't want to have sex?" Because she's like, "Ew." And I was like, just make sure that you marry someone you're attracted to, because sex is a wonderful and beautiful gift in marriage and part of your relationship. And so envision them for that. Let them think about that. That talking about sex like that's not going to make them want to have sex now. It's going to envision them for their future. And so make sure that our conversations around this are positive and encouraging and not done out of fear, but out of a vision for the sexual future we want for our children. So I'm going to stop there. Just some resources if you would like. That first one, those first three, SafeSurfer, Bark, and FamilyLink, are all monitoring and filtering apps. There are lots of other ones. There are many, many. You may use a completely different one. I have some free downloadables and recordings about pornography and about all sorts of things on my website, thechat.co.za. That's my Instagram handle and my Facebook handle. And then those are just three great, great resources in terms of getting good information to talk to your children about good media use, the dangers of pornography, and also Exodus Cry. They have watched them first before you watch them with your teenagers, but they have brilliant movies around sex trafficking, the impact of porn on children. There's a very disturbing one called Liberated about hookup culture, but just some really great resources to equip you to understand the culture that our children are growing up in order to help them. So just as we come into a close, thank you so much to Focus for doing these events. I think it's so vital for all of us. I love going to events where I get equipped and empowered, and for all of the things that they do. And I'm sure we all know this. I'm sure if you already partner with Focus, but they are such an incredible resource. When I started my organization, it was basically at a birthday party, one mom said to another mom, "Have you spoken to your daughter about sex?" And I realized that no one had, and no one had a positive view on it. So I said, let me go find out what we're supposed to be doing. First place I went, Focus websites. It was the first place I went, and there was all these free resources for me to use, and then I went to a couple of different places. But everything that Focus does, they fund in certain ways, and one of the ways they fund is through partnerships and financial donors and things like that. And so if you want to become one of Focus's partners, there is a little card like this where you can fill in your details and how much, just as much as you can in there, and as long as you sign it, and then you can become a partner with Focus. And then there is this incredible, I'm literally going to buy some of these things, but these all become yours when you sign up. So you'll get a free download of Launching Into the Teen Years, which is so many hours of amazing content about teenagers, because as I said, they're wonderful, but they are very complicated. So you'll get the free downloadable of that. And then you'll get, some of you may have been to some of Mandy Hart's talks. She is a legend. I want to parent world changers. I don't want to parent kids that just survive this world. I want them to make the world better. This resource will help you do that. And then a couple of other beautiful books, Hetty Britz's There's Hope at the End of the Rope. I sometimes feel like I'm at the end of my rope. That's a beautiful little book. And then Jackie Mungavin, who's actually a friend of mine from Durban, whose daughter was miraculously healed after a car accident. This is her devotional. It is a beautiful. I don't know about you, but sometimes when I'm struggling to find time with God, a devotional is just what I need. Like, okay, I have time, and I read that. She is an incredible writer and a beautiful resource. And then these three kind of are part of my offering. Of books is this one's called Safe Surfer. I didn't write this one, but this is a great book if you have little kids and you want to teach them about the internet. Equate the internet to the ocean. So there's safe places to swim. There's also sharks. There's also currents. And so they're the same people who do the Safe Surfer app. They wrote this book. It's a beautiful little book. And then these are my two books. This is the one to teach your children how babies are made. Okay, so if you have not done that yet, this is the one. This book I wrote for various reasons, but I wanted to write a book that any family could read to their child. So whether your child is adopted, whether you had your child when you were 16, whether you're a granny raising your child, this book will apply to them. And it's called Birds, Bees, and Destinies because I talk about how God created every child in the same way, a sperm and an ovum. But what you do with your life is up to you because no life is an accident. God created and planned everyone. And this one is just called Well Connected. It's kind of goes with our talk that we're going to do tonight. And this is a chapter book written for kind of senior primary age children and just goes through some of the challenges they're going to face in the online space and some very, very practical ways that they can navigate it in a healthy way. And also there's tips for you as parents. There's conversation cards for you to cut up for your dinner time conversation, one of my favorite things to do. And this whole pack becomes yours if you partner with Focus, if you want to just fill in that little form. And then also, if you're already a partner and you just want to up your donation a little bit, they're going to give it to you as well. But otherwise, there's stuff to buy at the back. There's beautiful resources. Stick around if you have any questions. I will be here. But otherwise, I hope we'll see you guys tonight.
Yeah, let's give a round of applause, Christy
Hirselman.
Thank you, ladies and gents, for coming out this morning. I know this has been a lot of information, but it's very, very important and vital information. So I hope you've taken it to heart. There is another little thing in your pack that looks like this. It says 60-second survey, and it's two sides. If you don't.